The Public Safety and Corrections Committee to order. And would Ms. Fitzpatrick lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, the Republic
for which it stands,
one nation,
under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
So thank you for the legislators that come on virtual. We do have a quorum. The committee chair is sick and the vice chair is plowing snow because he's down to one highway worker in his shop this morning. So I'm going to lead us through this agenda. approval of the December 7th minutes.
I'll move it.
Why am I looking? Oh, I'm sorry. I went to the wrong. I'm sorry, Fred. All right, Fred moves it. Is there a second?
Mullen, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Carried. All right, I'm getting the right agenda up now. Is Brenda Aston here online? All right, we'll move past that and possibly she'll join before we adjourn. Yes.
Just a clarification, that was minutes for January 4th and 25th, right?
25th, yes. I had the wrong agenda up on my tablet because it's not an iPad. Okay, Tim, emergency management.
Yeah, good morning. So I had two items on the agenda this morning. Both of them technically could probably be pulled at this point. Lady of Our Lords, we received a new invoice from them with a new pricing on it. And so we contacted Lords and said, what's this? We have a contract with you for a certain price. Why is the price increase? We were never notified. And they said, oop, our mistake, and we're going to honor the contract price. So there is no increase to the Lord's contract. Okay.
Good job.
And then the request for bid for generator, when I talked with Andy at the end of last week, he had said we actually took that to committee, or brought that committee back in November. And with my COVID brain, I completely forgot we had. So that item's already been approved. So I do have one item for executive session that I discussed with Jennifer. Pending litigation, I believe, is what we're going to call it. And so that'll be for executive session.
District Attorney's Office. Brooks, you're on. Well, you're muted.
You're all happy. I'm muted for a minute there. But yes, I'm back now. So. So we've got a bunch of stuff. Is Noel here? Okay. Noel is going to talk about the traffic diversion update. And I'm less versed in our numbers here, so I can't give you all of those numbers he's able to. I'm surprised he's not here. But my understanding is we've got most of our intermunicipal agreements signed. We're waiting for a few more to come back, and that payouts should follow relatively soon. That's about all I can tell you about diversion, other than it's up and running. The numbers we expected are...
Noel just walked in, Brooks.
Oh, okay. Then I'll let him
give
talk
him a second
that.
To get up here by a microphone.
He's going to be out of breath for a minute, so I'll have to wait a second after that. So,
well, he might have taken the elevator, so he might not be.
I'm just talking about the run from the door to the spot, so... Morning, Noel.
Oh, geez, thanks.
Turn that microphone on. Just hold the button down until it turns green. There you go.
All right.
The Brooks just started to introduce the diversion.
Okay. So the diversion payouts are in the process right now. I've paid out about 50% of them.
You don't need to do that.
What's that?
That way we can hear you.
Well, here's
the... Oh, sorry.
Breathe, Noel. It's okay.
What's that?
I said breathe. Breathe.
I know. Well, I had my vaccination Thursday, and I was one of those people that had... Have you had anybody report, like, sensitivity to light?
No, I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't... TV and... Yeah. I mean, and a headache, but that was about it. So, just reporting that these are the payouts for 2020. There's a few townships that are a few hundred dollars off. We're just doing the final like accounting. Sometimes data entry, some of the data entry was not put in properly by the applicant. So this is kind of like the third checks and balances of it. And mostly those townships are like the town of Whalen, village of Whalen, town of Corning, where they have multiple jurisdictions within the court's jurisdiction or multiple municipalities within the court jurisdiction. But these figures that I've passed out are almost over 60% have been cleared in regards to the checks and balances. And there's just a few, I know the town of Whalen has, I think there's like two tickets that have to be transferred over the town of, or the village of Whalen. So
for the legislators that are on virtual, the total amount is $124,152. And Brenda can send you an email with this as an attachment later, so you'll have it.
Okay.
In fact, I would send it out to everybody.
Can I make a comment? Go ahead. Here? Fred Potter. I emailed you the end of last week. Two of the towns in my district said they did not have that document, and I emailed you and copied them on it, and so I know there's four towns out of the six that hadn't sent in their contracts, and I think you need to reach out to them again.
Yep. Yes, sir. I was. I got your email. I am in the process of sending those back out to those emails that you copied me in on. And the information, I know that we sent out emails of, I know I sent out emails of all the agreements, IMAs. I know some got kicked back, some mailboxes were old. So I will email those out to you. And then I am following up with the other townships and municipalities this week just to make sure that they want to participate in the program.
Yeah, so. I think they were looking for something that could be delivered by snail mail instead of email.
I'll have to check my notes. I think I did mail out hard copies too as well, but I'm not real sure. I may have only mailed out hard copies to municipalities that I knew the emails were not up to date. So that may have been maybe what I did. So, okay. But I will hard mail them. Snail mail to those municipalities as well. Email.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. So also just this morning, just in regards to diversion, at the total as of midnight or is it 4 a.m. this morning? I can't remember the exact, midnight of last night, the amount that we've collected in the month of January is $70,000, $70,625. So we are definitely on track for the first month out of 12 for the anticipated budget coming in. So let me see here. Okay. Are there any other questions in regards to payouts or traffic diversion?
Of the total payout of 124, what was the amount that the county maintained or retained?
Oh, sorry. It's I apologize. I didn't print that out before I came over. It's 70%. That's 30% of the total. We collected $459,000 and some change. Mm-hmm. So we're paying out the 124, and then we paid out I think it was just under $30,000 or $40,000 to the company that managed the project. Okay. And then the remainder is left in there between the law enforcement. There was $35,000 allocated to law enforcement, and then the remainder is goes to the county's general fund.
Okay. Good. I can get those numbers out to you email.
The email you sent out earlier said that the county got around $200,000.
Yes, that was the estimated number. I think it's actually more than that, to be honest with you. Okay. I will email those numbers out when I return back to the office. I have them. I apologize. I didn't print those out.
That's fine.
For my report. Major equipment. I don't have the estimate. It was $3,900. We had, when I put the vehicle in for this year or for last year, I didn't break it down for the vehicle and the radio. I just put it all as in one component, and I needed to bring that to PSNC to get approval from last year's budget to buy the radio. It was, the radio was $3,700, and the undercover antenna that we purchased, I think, is another $150. So it was just under $3,900.
So, that was in the original equipment budget for 2020?
Yes, it's in the major equipment line. It was just all lumped in with the vehicle, and I didn't break it down. So when I did it.
So is there a motion from the committee to purchase that radio?
Well, I have a question about it. Why are we running it off of the 2020 budget?
It was put in for the 2020 budget. It was just lumped in with the vehicle. I didn't break it down, and we were going to bring it forth at the end of December. It was on the agenda, but we tabled it due to some questions we had to ask the county attorney about another item that I had lumped in with that. So and I didn't get to it in the January meeting. So
the vehicle and the associated equipment were budgeted in 2020. The vehicle was purchased.
Yes.
There's money left over in that major equipment line that we need to use in order to buy this radio.
Yes.
Is that all right, Aaron?
Well, I don't understand. I don't know what the right word is, budgetarily or whatever, on how that works with now that we're into 2021. Wouldn't the old 2020 money have been rolled into the general fund or something like that?
So, Aaron, the department heads and, well, all departments have the ability to encumber funds. They have to work with Tammy. So in the month of November, December, if there's anything like purchases or outstanding purchase orders, they're encumbered. So she knows not to roll that into general fund that's outstanding. So, you know, once we get into the end of February, that's really kind of when everything is shut down.
Okay. So this was encumbered then?
Yep.
I'll make
that's motion. My understanding. Yes.
I'll second it.
Who made the motion? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. All right. Any other questions on this? If not, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Forfeitures.
Yeah, and the next item we have is just the we have a forfeiture account that is established. We have two accounts. We have the county's account, and then we have one that's established with the New York State Police. District Attorney Baker was at was it a fatal or a serious motor vehicle accident about 3 months ago up in the Whalen area. And the troopers, unfortunately, didn't have, we've bought cameras for them in the past with this money, and they put those cameras in the cars and they're able to. I believe the last time I purchased cameras was for the Bath Barracks, and it was, I believe, 5 years ago. And we buy up to, what they need. I spoke with the Sergeant Trimble at the time. They're looking for like 10 cameras. and we buy them off of Amazon or the cheapest bid. And their first, the money came out to $750. So I'm just looking for approval to spend that money.
For 10 cameras.
Yes. Well, 10 cameras and memory cards. So
little Kodak ones with the cardboard around them.
No, actually, Scott, they are Kodak cameras. Disposable. They're Kodak digital cameras.
So, wow.
Yeah. So they're I got them priced out at, I believe, $69 or $70 a piece, and then the cards too.
And the money to pay for these comes from forfeitures.
Yes, it's
correct. And if I can, Noel, this is actually, yeah. We have an agreement with the state police where we keep their share of forfeiture money in a separate account. We take all of the money from a state police forfeiture and we put some aside for the state police. Otherwise it all goes to Albany. So in the way it works here is we set aside their money in an account and use it locally in Steuben County. So this is really state police forfeiture money that we've agreed to use for their purposes. We've had this account in place for, I don't know, as long as we've done forfeiture, almost 20 years now. And there's never very much in it, but there's enough to do this, which is something we've done before. And at the fatal, guys were taking pictures on scene to get evidence quickly with their cell phones, which creates an absolute nightmare for under the new 245 discovery stuff. So this is absolutely necessary, and we've done it before.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second?
I'll second it. Tom Ryan.
Yep. Question, Fred?
No.
Gary had a question.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we set this up, like he said, about 20-some years ago, so we could keep the money in Steuben County, and we purchased printers and other different things many years ago for the state police when they couldn't afford to do so.
Okay.
It's nothing new. Okay. It's nothing new.
Thanks, Gary.
Nothing else? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
The last thing is just a really quick update. I will email this out to the, I may have already checked, but I will email this out to the legislative committee as well as the legislators. They're just giving an update and a 2020 update from the narcotics investigators, Walt Mackney, myself, that do drug cases. We assisted in over 50 cases last year. 17 of those cases took place in the village of Bath, 5 cases in the city of Corning, 15 cases in the city of Hornell, and the remaining 13 were in jurisdictions, the village of Whalen, town of Bath, and village of Canisteo, village of Savona, town of Irwin, town of Hornellsville, Cohocton, and the village of Pena Post. So out of that 50 cases, 40% of those cases were drugs purchased, were pharmaceuticals, fentanyl, Suboxone, OxyContin, and others. 25% of the 50 was heroin. 22% was cocaine or crack. 22% was heroin and 13% was cocaine or crack. We assisted in also in seizing 2 illegally possessed handguns that we tracked out of the state of Pennsylvania from a camp. I just want to touch base with that case just real quickly. That was put together in the city of Hornell. If it wasn't for the district attorney's office and using our assets, buy money to purchase those guns because the purchase was $1,000, that gun would have gone to the hands of some criminal probably locally within the Hornell area. We bought the one gun and then quickly gathered some intelligence and knew that the guy was carrying a second gun. We made an arrest that evening in early morning hours. So we seized 2 guns off the street, and we're currently, it's an active case, but we are currently tracking down other firearms from thefts involved in that in the state of Pennsylvania. So I'll email that out that just put together. That's. Are there any questions in regards to the drug cases or how we do our work, the drug work, and on the district attorney side?
Is that an increase over 2019?
I believe it's no. I'm sorry. In 2019, we did 72 cases. So amidst COVID, and I can honestly say, from March, the end of March until probably June, our unit really was kind of saddled, and we didn't do a whole lot of work. People were scared and stuff like that. I will say, when the stimulus checks came out, things started picking up, and currently things are starting to pick up again. So yes, so
yeah, but I've got a question. Like, overall, for the past, I mean, look at the past 10 years or so, let's say, what has been the overall trend with drug arrests in the county? I mean, have we seen an increase in use, a decrease in use? Is it flat?
We have seen, there's an overall number increase in cases, Steve. Sort of year over year. Last year, I think we'll see less cases because of the COVID situation, although we may see there's more of an uptick because we're seeing people arrested multiple times as dealers with bail reform. So, but overall, we have seen I think we saw a huge increase in the early 90s when I first started because we got hit with a crack epidemic. That kind of ebbed and started to slow down because of some enforcement stuff we did. And then we got hit with the meth epidemic and we worked with that, then followed by the opioid. And now we've got a combination of stuff going on. So we are drug cases tend to be trending as a percentage of our cases upward. And our numbers are staying the same or going up pretty consistently year over year. I'm not sure whether that's a function of enforcement because our drug initiative is extremely effective. We used to rely upon the state police exclusively for a drug task force. They don't produce numbers like our local guys do. They don't, I'm not sure exactly why. A lot of it's their protocols drive cases differently than our cases are. I'm not sure whether it's fully a function of a drug problem or whether it's a function of increased or simply better enforcement. We're not adding many people to the puzzle, but we are certainly doing a better job with what we have.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yep. All right. We had a couple more things.
We have a question from Kelly.
Yes. I just wondered how much harder it is now to do that job with drug enforcement and how much harder it is to actually get to the point where you press charges and get them to court.
Well, there are two things going on here. One is bail reform. I mean, traditionally, you know, we depend upon cooperating civilians to help us out. Without the specter of going to jail or being in jail, it's getting harder to get people to cooperate. Discovery reform has done the same thing to us. Now with the way we have to turn over absolutely everything in our case, the likelihood of being of a confidential informant's information being released to a defendant has gone up dramatically. And our folks on the street know that. So it's getting harder for us to find cooperating people. And then when it comes to actually moving cases, right now it's impossible. And we did actually catch up, last year by doing the two grand juries from October to December and running, you know, between 2 and 3 days a week. We actually managed to catch up our cases, and we were doing right about where we should have been when we got shut down again. But getting cases indicted and getting cases moved is a whole different story. It's just the first step in the process. We have no trial dates yet. We did one set of trials and everybody got sick. So right now I'm hearing from judges April. I'm hearing not April. I'm hearing July. I spoke with our chief administrative judge last week and she was very nice, but not very helpful. She doesn't know. Nobody really knows what's going to happen with trials. And I think moving cases is going to depend upon people that have trials, because that's when people realize these things are real. So that's our problem right now, is the court system has stopped.
I think just to add to the as an investigator to the what the district attorney stated, it's definitely been a learning curve for us, because our unit, different from one of the reasons why we produce such good numbers in our county, is that we're a smaller unit. We act on actionable intelligence quicker. There's not a lot of red tape for us. We just make phone calls, text messages between us, and we move on that relatively very quickly. It's not, we don't have to run something all the way up to Canandaigua and then it comes all the way back and then run it back up again. So with the bail reform and our confidential informants on the streets, they're not as willing to give actionable intelligence to us when we make an arrest immediately or a few days after, because they know that they're going to either be released relatively shortly, and they don't want to cut those ties with their dealers or their sellers, or within their ties within the drug community. So that's been a learning curve for us. So the intelligence that we now gather is sometimes months old. So it's just, it just makes our job more difficult, but we are learning. And like the gun case, you know, we made that actionable intelligence within 30 minutes after we bought the other gun. So, and we had to use more resources and manpower to stay on that car and follow that car. It just required us to do it a different way than we generally do. But we are, it's a learning curve, but we are working with what we have.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Contract renewal.
Yep. This is the contract with Finger Lakes Paralegals. It's Pam Mayaney. It's for two things. One is for training. She has trained our people in the discovery process, and that's largely completed. She had a couple of projects she was working on. One involves getting rid of old records. We have obviously, you know, we produce an amazing amount of paper in the DA's office. We're taking up a huge amount at the record center. And what Pam was working with Deb Beaver in my office and me and Amanda Chafee to put together a program and a protocol for automatically disposing of records over time and getting rid of some stuff that's been sitting there for 40 or 50 years. That's part of her contract. The other thing is she was working with us to train local court judges and create that program for the virtual CAF that we have been going forward with. Obviously, we've heard there's some legislation on that. Whether or not we'll have to use her to take additional steps, I don't know. But I do want to finish up the records contract that is part of what we're doing and make sure that my staff is trained in the new methodology we're going to get rid of our records under. And have her available to train the judges if we decide to go with a virtual CAP pilot program we're doing. If the legislation's not passed, it makes us a statewide creature. So we're just looking to re-up the contract. It's an automatic renewal contract. Sort of the only tweak here is providing that training for CAP if we decide to go that route. And we won't do it if the state's going to do it. So
I have a question.
I'm sorry, was there a question?
Yeah, Mullen. Hey, I have a question. Hey, Brooks. It seems maybe I'm thinking of a different paralegal, and maybe it was related to forfeiture or something, but it seems like this contract has been extended almost since I've been on here. And I thought a lot of times it was, you know, that this was going to be the last year and that sort of thing. And I wanted to ask that question.
Right. It has been the last thing a couple of different times there. You're right. Pam was the one to help create the forfeiture program. So she trained our people on that. And we re-upped a couple times. If you recall, we lost Deb Lawrence, who did our forfeiture stuff. And Pam stepped back in to train some new people to do our forfeiture accounting for us. So that was one role. Then she stepped in when discovery reform was created. We contracted with her instead of somebody else to train people in the discovery process and help create our answer for 245, which I will tell you is probably one of the best in the state from what I've heard around. And I'll talk about a discovery update in just a couple of minutes. There are different phases that we are doing different things, and she has a skill set that other folks don't. She is, as far as this contract deals with the records retention piece, she's got a history with the office that goes back to 1980. I want to say five or so. So a lot of the records we're dealing with are kept on, they're kept on cards. They're kept on, in notebooks that unless you've been around the office for a long time, you wouldn't know what we keep and what we don't keep. So we're using her institutional knowledge right now to get rid of a lot of stuff that we shouldn't be storing and to train our people into what we keep and what we don't. So it's creating a different program each time. We've used her less and less over time. She was actually doing paralegal work for us at one point under contract. She's not doing that anymore. She's not doing the forfeiture anymore. She's not training discovery anymore. She is finishing up this project. And then we have included her as a possibility for training local court judges, my ADAs, and public defenders, if that's appropriate, for how we do virtual CAF once OCA gives us a program.
Okay. Mr. Mullen, this is Jen Prosek. This contract renews every 6 months. So you probably hear about it quite a bit because it does come in front of you every 6 months. It allows a district attorney to use Pam Maini for purposes of training his staff. Now, with regard to spending money to train court staff, that is not in the contract, and that would be a change in the scope. There are discussions at the 7th Judicial District that the court system itself should be the one training its employees and not the county training the employees. So that's under discussion. That would be new, but you hear about every 6 months, and it's for training of county staff.
What is our, Brooks, what is our annual cost that we have for this contract?
Well, it varies year to year. I mean, when we were creating the 245 discovery, it was a lot because we were looking at a lot of, that was a huge project to get that underway, and she was responsible for a big piece of that, and then training our people that we brought in. Right now, for this year, if we don't do anything more with CAP, it'll be a nominal number just to finish up the records program, and that's the only thing we have on deck for. So it varies. The hourly rate, I think, is $75 an hour, has not changed since we started this contract 7 or 8 years ago, and we're not looking to change the rate. And it just depends upon the hours that we need her for. You know, right now, the only project that we have is finishing up this records retention thing, which has got very little to go. It's actually just about to, we have to send some stuff up to the appellate division to destroy records and get approval. She'll assist with creating those orders because we just haven't done it. I mean, in my history in the office in 25 years, we haven't done this stuff. So we'll be making folks at records very, very happy with what we're doing. So I'm it's a long way to tell you, Scott, I can't tell you the exact number, but it varies based upon the work. Right now, the only work we have is finishing up records retention and possibly training. And again, as Jen mentioned, if we have to go that route, we'll be back here looking to change the contract, and we can review that concept when it happens. But I wouldn't expect, we're looking at more than, I don't know, $1,000 or $2,000 this year tops.
Okay, that helps. Scott, so do we have a motion to renew this?
Scott, I've got a question. It's okay.
Can we get a motion and second since we've been discussing the damn thing for 20 minutes first?
I'll move it.
Second?
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, the records thing, you know, that I can tell you how many records get accumulated in my office over the course of just a couple of years. So that's a great idea. It seems strange to me that it would be someone working under the auspices of the district attorney's office solely who would be training judges in the law.
There'd be no legal training. I'm sorry. It's technical training, how to make the computer work, how to serve the forms, all that stuff. Pam, the former local court clerk. So that's all. It's how to make the interface work. That's all it is. No okay. Legal training. Okay.
Gotcha. I mean, I don't think it's our role anyway as the county to do that. Like we said, I think it should be the states is doing that, but that's okay. We're cool.
And that's the hope. And that's why we're not changing the contract right now.
Gotcha.
So this is for up to a couple $1,000s then?
Yes. I don't know what the actual number would be at the end of the year, but that's what okay. We're looking at is tying up records retention. This is not a part-time employee kind of situation. This is, I don't know, once every 3 or 4 weeks, come in for a couple of hours, get something done. Tops.
I believe last year we only paid Pam somewhere in between the $4,500 to the $6,500 range. Please don't hold me to that, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that I don't believe it was more than $7,000 for the whole year.
That was in the context of Article 245 discovery reform. So
yes,
that would be a big year for us.
Yes. That's
any other questions? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Thank you. Well, update on COVID.
Since I've been talking too long, I'll go relatively quickly. Right now, COVID has got everything backed up, and that's a reality. There is it's sort of the elephant is working its way through the python right now. We have this huge bulge of cases. When we break loose for trials, it's going to be absolutely crazy. And there's going to be some costs associated with it that we didn't have last year. I just wanted to forewarn the committee about that. You know, we didn't hire any expert witnesses last year. We didn't have any trials. Right now I have 10 homicides pending in Steuben County, which is something we haven't dealt with those kind of numbers in a long time. There's an arson case. There are, I think, 4 vehiculars. There are 3 sort of standard murders. There's a drug overdose, and maybe there may be another vehicular homicide in there. There are some expert witnesses. I've already gotten notices on all 3 murder cases that they're looking at psychiatric defenses. We're going to have to hire people to deal with that issue. On a couple of those cases, we have significant alcohol issues that require expertise beyond just what's blood alcohol content. We've had to hire, we've talked to an expert about that. We'll be using that expert for trial. So just, you know, we're going to see some of the costs that were sitting there that we didn't use in 2020 for expert witnesses. We're going to see when and if trials start. I don't know, again, we don't know when that's going to be. I have heard from folks in Rochester, they may send down visiting judges because we have so many trials pending and so many major cases that need to move. But you know, right now, generally cases are not moving almost at all because there's no trial date to put a defendant sort of to task to move a case. I'm expecting we're looking at probably 2 years of delays in trials, but we have major cases with experts that are going to be out there. So I may be coming back to you for some money or trying to use some diversion money to pay for experts this year in numbers that we don't generally see. So that's just sort of our general case status update. Our obviously indictments have fallen back behind. I've made application to impanel a new grand jury, and I'm hopeful that maybe in early February we can start that. So we won't be very far behind, and we'll keep moving forward. And what fits into that is our discovery piece. I'm sorry, is there a question?
I just wanted to add, Brooks, everybody understands in the legislature, we had a homicide trial that was scheduled that thankfully Brooks made some calls and it didn't have to, it didn't go through. But just to house the witnesses for this homicide trial because of COVID was going to be $8,000 because of quarantine issues, because they were all out of state. So, I mean, when I got the word in regards to this, I kind of panicked and texted Brooks. But it's because I will be robbing Peter to pay Paul all year long to manage those kind of items within the budget to try to maintain the budget that we've set forth for this coming year. Just so this kind of put thing in perspective.
So if we didn't have any of that activity for the last 3 quarters of 2020, there should have been a lot of money that rolled into the general fund that was unspent, right?
I believe so. I believe there's like $16,000 or $20,000 that rolled over into the general fund from the.
But for us, it's a timing issue.
Right.
We didn't spend it last year. We need to spend it this year.
Correct. Right. I just kind of want to put things in
perspective. Yeah, that's helpful. That's
fine. It's 2 things, Scott. 1, we didn't spend it last year. And 2, we are facing more major cases. Normally we have maybe 1 or 2 homicides pending in the county at once. With 10 right now, that means an expert in probably 7 of those cases that we're going to have to hire. And that's a different animal than we're used to dealing with. So it's, you know, it's like when we dealt with, when Whedon came through with the Clayton case and had to hire experts, we've had to hire experts in other major homicide cases in the past. That just, those cases happen once in a while. We don't, as Jack knows, we don't aggressively budget for expert witnesses because we don't use them that often. So,
right.
You know, 1, we put some money back in the fund because we didn't use it. Again, that's 16 or 20. You know, we'll try to minimize our expert witnesses. We use the state police folks as much as we possibly can. We use our own mental health people as much as we possibly can. But sometimes in cases like this, we just have to hire somebody else because that's the nature of the case. So I just wanted to forewarn folks, our number of cases, it's not just the fact that we've sort of moved them all to this year, including last year's cases, but the sheer number pending is something that I think the last time this kind of number was pending in our county was 1997. That was just me and Mike McCartney and John Tunney. And I ended up trying a murder case 3 years out of law school because of it. So, you know, this is an anomaly for us here in Steuben County, which thank goodness.
Okay.
The only other update is our discovery unit. And I will tell you, those folks are doing a phenomenal job. We have been able to set them up to work remotely, and I'm not hearing any complaints from anybody about the speed with which things are being turned over. The computer system seemed to be working very, very well. Our virtual discovery program is working great. The people we have there, the two paralegals we have and the two attorneys are doing exactly what they need to do to get stuff done. I think we are probably running as smoothly as anywhere in New York State with that. And we are doing it again with less people than we projected because one, the technology has been good, and two, we were able to find some really good people. Bruce Rosencrantz has turned out to be, he kind of reminds me a lot of Mike McCartney, an absolute expert in this field, and has done a great job for us. Jen Galvin, too, with her experience, has done a super job, and the paralegals are great, too. So, and one, thank you all for your support and helping us get this unit together. And two, I think we are, you know, we're doing more with than we projected we're going to be able to do with less people because you let me hire good people. So thank you.
Good. Anything else?
Nothing right now.
Is there any new information regarding virtual CAP?
Well, with the state? From the state, we've had a couple of meetings, a couple of stakeholder meetings. One of the things they wanted us to do, we had to get everybody on board to agree that we would do this thing. Right now, our local court judges are on board with the idea. In theory, Rochester is. They wanted us to sort of put together an idea of how we're going to train some people to expand the process. That's what we were sort of looking at. And they were also working with Tom O'Mara because some of the legislation that empowers that to happen had sunsetted. And I know Tom was going to had put some legislation together. And now it looks like in the current budget collection of bills that have come out through the governor, virtual court is part of the program. So that may obviate the need for us to do this kind of by ourselves. As you guys know, we've talked about doing this as a pilot program. We would bring it up, we would do it, and then let other people kind of copy what we're doing. Now, the fact that we have sort of got the groundwork in place will put us three steps ahead if OCA says we can do this, and if this legislation is passed, I see no reason why it wouldn't be, if it's something proposed by the governor with the majorities in both the Assembly and the Senate. So my hope, right, we are back to virtual CAP right now. That's the way we are doing it now because of the new COVID restrictions. And I think we're going to continue for the foreseeable future. Some of our city court judges have been very vocal. They want to continue going that route. So my hope is that, you know, we are prepared, we are able, we are doing it well. And if we get legislation signed, that we'll continue to do it. And, you know, those positive externalities and cost savings and threat savings to the jail will continue.
Okay, good. I guess the last thing I would ask is, I'm not sure when the last time we got a update as far as the numbers on CAP court, but if we could get one for the year of 2020 with all the statistics and costs, that would be helpful.
Sure. I will talk to, I think the sheriff actually keeps the numbers, but I will work out, we'll take a look at it. Sure.
Okay. All right. County manager.
Nothing other than what you have under other business.
Did Brenda Aspen join us? Where is he? Oh, Sean.
We didn't do the first item on the agenda, Sean, because Brenda wasn't here.
Understood. And if you'll indulge me, I think I'm educated enough on the request that I can make the request for her. And I think it's important that I do that because it's time sensitive. I don't have the benefit of seeing any paperwork she submitted to you, but what I can tell you is she's requesting approval of a new distribution from ILS called Distribution 11. This is a bookend or a continuation of prior distributions. They've occurred in a series. The first one was 5, the next one was 8, this one is 11, and it's for a new 3-year contract for a total of revenue to the county of $421,794. And it's split up in $140,000 increments across each year. Those monies are used to pay the salary of one full-time conflict defender and the equivalent of one part-time conflict defender. And so those are continuing costs. And it's important that we continue to have those costs covered. And importantly, that application to the state has to be in by February 12th, 2021. So I would respectfully request your approval to apply for and receive distribution number 11.
Okay, thank you. Is there a motion?
Motion, Mullen.
Potter, second.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Sean. Under other business, we have this Second Amendment ordinance that came from the 2A group. Jack and I received it probably a month ago, and we asked the county attorney to obviously review it and express her concerns if she had any. And we then had her send that out to the committee members, I believe last week. So, Jen, if you could just kind of walk through a summary review of it.
Okay. Everybody received the email, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So this is the Second Amendment Preservation Act that was provided to us for review. If you all recall, I believe this is the second round that they have presented. They presented another round, say, about a year ago. And then COVID kind of put this on halt because they were supposed to come in and meet and do open comments. So the chairman, myself, and Jack had met with them after they submitted the first round and kind of expressed our concerns that we had with the first round. So that was, this is their second attempt at it. In reviewing the second round, some of the same issues still exist that I pointed out, try to point out simply without getting too far in the weeds on the legalese of it. But in a nutshell, I think a lot of the concern that I've had with the first one and this one is it's written under the premise that your Second Amendment right is unlimited, which is not true. So it's the starting point that kind of fails to launch any sort of act in my mind. And that was the same with this one. Also, you know, it is when you're reading the constitutional an amendment such as the Second Amendment, you can't read that in a vacuum by itself, because what this does is it ignores other clauses that you still have to abide by. So those were just kind of, you know, to highlight the memo. That's kind of what happens here, is it starts from a spot that's not true and then just looks at the Second Amendment language. Because if you just look at the Second Amendment language, it's very clear, you know, well, regulated militia being necessary to secure a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's what the Second Amendment says. But that's not what it means when you look at the rest of the Constitution and then all of the case law that interprets the Second Amendment. So my recommendation, I think, you know, it's fairly obvious from the memo that it's not something we can entertain without violating other parts of the Constitution, and probably most importantly to all of us personally, our oath of office to uphold the Constitution. Is where we get jammed up.
And so I would agree. I mean, I'm probably as much of a gun rights person as anyone in this group. But we also gave an oath of office pledge when we took these jobs, and to begin not enforcing state laws, I think is just reckless. It, especially with the governor that we have, I mean, I could see where all sorts of consequences could impact the county and all the residents of the county
if we did something like that. So I am not in favor at all of moving forward with this thing in the way that it was presented to us. Does anybody else have comments? Yes, Aaron.
Sure. Yeah, I agree in part and disagree in part with what has been discussed. I think that the Second Amendment means what it says, and I fully believe that New York State has gone too far in its regulations. But we also have very fundamental principles that are constitutional that make it so that we as a county can't override what the state has enacted, as Attorney Prosek has mentioned, preemption doctrine. And so just as I don't think that in San Francisco they should have sanctuary city laws that override, you know, immigration statutes, I don't think that we can, as a county, override what the state has done. I think that our recourse is not to put our local officials in an impossible position where they either have to obey the county law or obey the state law when the county really doesn't have authority to override the state anyhow. But I think that what our recourse is to join in different lawsuits who have sued the state. And I know that there have been lawsuits where we've had opportunity to be amicus and we haven't joined them as a county. And I know that we have joined other lawsuits as amicus over immigration issues. And so I'm a little frustrated that we end up on the opposite end of things where I'd like to be politically, but I completely agree that this is not something that we should pass. There, we don't have the authority to pass it. And I don't think that we, I think that it would just for the sheriff, the district attorney, other people who would have to abide by this as law enforcement officials, they would be in an absolute impossible position violating state or local law.
Mr. Mullen, also, I don't know how closely you looked at this, but it, you know, it violates other things such as standing. It gives any individual the right to sue any other individual if they enforce a state law or don't abide by the local law. So there's just problems of that nature also. And then that lawsuit gets held in state court, which a local law cannot go through state court if you're trying to not abide by state law. So there's just a lot of legal technical issues in it that, you know, you and I as legal nerds could talk about for hours, but there's a lot of that I just wanted to point out as well.
I think the interesting thing is that Jen, Jack, and I had three different meetings with Mr. Peterson last year. And I finally said, we need to pull back on providing the legal advice to this group because we were doing that. And Jen was doing a very thorough job telling him all of the faults with the drafts that he was bringing. And we encouraged them to get legal counsel of their own and put together something with someone who understands constitutional law and could write something that could actually be passed. And unfortunately, I don't believe that they did that.
Well, it would appear in their writings, it sounds to me like it was written by a lawyer. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I wanted to be one once, but they said my IQ was too high. So they said you should become a teacher.
You made a good choice.
Yeah. Yeah, well, with that being said, I respect Jen's opinion on this, but I would like to see us get off our hands and move forward. I mean, the state seems to run amok. They don't seem to abide by the Constitution and stuff they throw down at us. And in my opinion, I think we should move it forward and let it go to a court. And let them make the decisions, not us.
Well,
my opinion,
Scott. I think for me, I mean, you know, you'd be surprised where I stand on the Second Amendment.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, no, I think you would actually. But, you know, to me, regardless of what Aaron was saying, we, you know, we've been on the wrong side of lawsuits before. I think this is going to put us where we're going to be in a position to be probably brought into court, probably by the attorney general. And, you know, I think in pretty short order. And we're going to end up having to defend the indefensible here. I mean, like it or not, you know, we are beholden to the state of New York, and we are a creation of the state of New York. And, you know, I don't want us to be the South Carolina of 1861 when it comes to us trying to nullify the law, because obviously it didn't work out then on a much grander scale, I understand, but the prospects of our success in passing this law are probably much less than they were in 1861. So I think we're just wasting our time. We've made the point twice since I've been on the legislature, reaffirming our belief in the Second Amendment. Courts from the state up to the Supreme Court have passed on what the Second Amendment means since I've been on the legislature. This is just going to set us up to either incur a bunch of legal costs defending something that we're going to be ultimately unsuccessful on. I think it's just it's just a waste of our time. We've already done this twice. I think that's enough.
And really, they should be taking this to the state level where the laws are actually written.
Yes.
Versus bringing it to a subordinate municipality of the state, expecting us to start the fight for them.
And we mentioned that to them when we met with them, and we gave them, I thought, some good ideas about where to go and who to talk to. And yeah. It just kind of seems like it's very much the same as it was the first time.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. If nothing else, we have to go into executive session for a litigation matter. Is there a motion to go into executive session?
Motion, Mullen.
Otter, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We are in executive session.
Thank you, everyone.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Motion to go out of regular session. Adjourn.
Motion, Mullen.
Second, Ryan.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.